Hello, and welcome to My Streaming Bubble, the podcast where I talk about the shows I love with the people I tolerate. I'm your host, Jen, and say no more, moaning more, because while today may not be Rex Manning Day, it is podcast crossover day, as I am thrilled to welcome the hosts of the amazing and nightmarishly fierce podcast, A Nightmare on Fear Street. Welcome, Trent and Sheree. Thank you so much for being here today. I'm so excited that you guys are here.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
We're excited to be here. And yeah.
Yeah. Now, I was like, I want to meet Jen because, like, the episode you did on Fear Street, I was not there for. And I was like, I want to meet Jen.
And that was such a fun episode. Thank you guys for having me on. So I love it. And I love your guys' podcast. I just listened to the Megan episode and that was a lot of fun to listen to. And I'll just say that with that movie, it's fine. It's a movie. It's okay.
Oh, you and Josh cool. Corngut are just out here hating on my two personality.
Like, it was fine. It was fun. I enjoyed, there was like the kid that gets killed. I enjoyed his death a lot.
That's the one thing the unrated version does have going for it, is we get to see that ear become full Laffy Taffy. It's great.
Yes. So yes. Yeah, I love listening to you guys. You guys are so much fun to listen to. So thank you again for being here today. Yes. And while they like to focus on the horror, today they got to choose, they chose something different. So in today's episode of That's What I Call a 90s Movie, we will be discussing the 90s cult classic Empire Records, starring Anthony LaPaglia. Sorry, I didn't practice that. Liv you Tyler. Got it.
Rory... I thought he's Australian today, so my whole life was a lie.
Yes. Rory Cochrane, Ethan Embry, Renee Zellweger, and, well, you know the rest. It's available free on YouTube. Pretty sure I think you can watch it free on Plex if you do the Plex thing. Rentable on other streaming services or free at your local library. And this is your reminder to support your local library. It's like, if you don't plan on using the card, still sign up for a card because those numbers look good for your library. So just do it. And a lot of libraries, you can do online card registration. So pants aren't even required. So just do it.
And a lot of them have audiobook setups now. So you never have to go to the library, but you can have those. I listen to so much garbage that way.
Mm-hmm, same. I do nothing but like Libby audiobooks, and I love them so much. It's so easy and convenient. Yeah.
The new U book is waiting for me, and I know it's a mess, but it's waiting for me in my cart right now because it's my turn. Libby.
Oh, that's awesome. I've had to check out American Gods like 4 times because it's taking me forever to get through it, but it's so good. No. But yeah.
I thought I was going to run at the Body Keep Score this year, and I was not going to. And so I'm back on the wait list to continue my journey with that book when it comes back to me. I was like, this is too much. We're still in this decade. How about I stop at this chapter and just put it free into the wild? Yeah. When it comes back to me like a boomerang, I'll pick it up again.
And that's great because I love that it keeps your spot. So you're like, oh, yes, I don't have to go hunting for it. So
right?
Love it. So this is going to be your brief spoiler warning, your quick spoiler warning, brief synopsis for a movie that came out in the 90s. But what IMDb says is 24 hours in the lives of the young employees at Empire Records when they all grow up and become young adults, thanks to each other and the manager. They all face the store, joining a chain store with strict rules. I don't know who writes these.
It doesn't know justice. No. Also, Google has it listed as a romantic comedy, which I would have never hit play on had I seen that. So I'm happy Google was not around when I was a youngin.
Yeah. If anything, like just a coming of age film. Yeah. So yeah,
I could see dramedy because all the emotions are heightened. Like, oh, yeah. Everybody's at 10 all day.
This is very clear.
One of my notes is I would shop here just for the drama.
Oh, like, yeah. Right? It's like, that's why their stores always have people in it because of the insane shit the staff does.
You can get lunch in a show there.
Exactly.
There's the manager again making a monologue as he jumps on the stairs to beat up an employee.
It's one of my favorite moments. All right. And what I says about this movie is this is a superb movie. It has theft, gambling, music, assault, 90s teen angst, and of course, sexy Rexy. Truly a superb cult classic. So, and we will be talking about some of the differences between the theatrical release and the fan remix, which the fan remix sounds like that's the one that's on YouTube. And that's the one that I own and I have seen a kajillion times. So, all right, well, we'll go ahead and get right in. So why did you guys pick this movie and what are your general thoughts on it, Trent?
Well, I had never seen this movie and I knew I've always heard of it. I've seen clips in like, you know, online things and trivia things. And I know Sheree has always talked about this movie and how much she loves it. And I love like 95% of this cast. So I was like, I need to watch it. Like, it needs to happen. And so that's why I agreed with Sheree, but she was like, what about this? And I was like, okay, let's do it. And general thoughts, I like this movie. It doesn't speak to me like it speaks to some other folks. I found it a little difficult to connect to 70% of the characters, even though the performances are great. My lived experience, my perspective, it was a little more difficult for me, but I live for Liv Tyler. She's ageless. I'm pretty sure she's a vampire. Mm-hmm. I've never seen her in the daytime. But yeah, so I really enjoyed it, but you know, it's not one of my all-time favorites.
Right on. And Sheree, what'd you think? I mean, we know that you love this movie, but like how much?
No, it was always on whenever we actually had cable as a child and we had HBO. I was like, ooh, it's on again, because HBO owned this girl. Like, she was like, you're gonna see it four times a day, and I'd be parked. I had the biggest crush on AJ. I googled him. Johnny still looks the same too. He does a lot of cop shows, and that's not my bag, but it might be something to do a little swing by on real quick just to see him in action again. I love the soundtrack. It's part of the reason I think I wanted to write for the Rolling Stone as a kid, because I really did love music. And like every needle drop, even the ones that are not my lane for music, it's iconic. Again, the cast is just peak 90s. The script, I think, could have easily become one of those after school special trash situations. But because of the acting and the directing and just like the right time, because it's such a time capsule of like, that 95, the year of like 95, 96, before, it's after we're like done being like, everything must be catered to adults, because everything was so catered to adults. And right before, what if the WB is real? And so we were starting to get all these like teen-based like horror movies, like My Boyfriend's Back and like the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer and all of those. And it was kind of just like, what if we did it, but we made it a little bit punk? Like, what if we did all of those things except but Green Day? And Green Day's like, we're not talking to you. So when you were like, I'm doing the 90s, I was like, there's three movies that are not horror from the 90s that I love and I never get to talk about. And this one was the one I needed to talk about first.
Awesome. Well, I am always up for talking about this movie. I love this movie so much. This is the one of like four movies that I built my personality around in high school. I, in the summer, I had to watch Empire Records, Dazed and Confused, Clueless, and The Craft before I could start my day. And granted, I was young, so I could start late in the afternoon and not get tired. But those were the things I would have to do in the mornings. And
I'm happy you brought up The Craft, because this movie is the reason why Robin Tunney has that awful wig in The Craft.
Yes. I was going to ask that. Okay, that makes so much
sense. Your lead shows up bald, you have to improvise. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, good for her for being dedicated to her craft. Wink, wink.
Absolutely. I always thought that was like Deb was just so cool. Like, I love kind of like these categorizations within these characters. You know, you have Lucas, who's kind of like, he's got more of like that beatnik look because of like the black turtleneck. AJ's the romantic. Mark is like the silly, goofy stoner boy that he just, oh my God, I loved him so much. It was always hard to pick in my teen horniness which one I liked the most. It always kind of shifted depending on my mood.
I was always focused on AJ, but like I was never mad about Ethan Embry, because Ethan Embry was a silent snack his whole career. And we never talked about it. And I was like, because I remember on Freaky Links, I was like, hello, good sir. You say you got a twin out there. When will we see him too? And then they canceled the show.
I crushed on him hard in like between this movie, Oh God, like that thing you do, even though he has kind of a smaller role.
Yes.
And then Can't Hardly Wait, which is like one of my favorite movies.
As a child, I saw this movie called Dutch with Ed O'Neill. People always forget that I am younger than these people because I'm like, Devin saw when Casper, when I was a child, really like activated me. And they're like, he was a kid. I'm like, what do you think I was?
Right.
Like, I was a fetus. So like, let me have my moment. But no, I remember seeing Ethan Embry in that movie and I watched that movie a lot, but I never liked it. And I didn't know later on. It's because like, oh, I think he's cute.
Yeah, I used to watch Dutch way too many times, and when I was going through to do like the 6 degrees of Nicolas Cage, I was like, well, I'll see what I can do with Ethan, and then Dutch came up and I was like, oh my God, all of a sudden all these memories came back, and it's like, Ed O'Neill and like, yeah, oh my God, it's just I wonder how that movie holds up.
I'm afraid of most of his back catalog just because he was working in the 90s and the 90s were different. Yeah. And so like, because even today I'm like, oh, some of these things could have been worded differently in this movie. It's just, it was a wild time. People were just doing the things and nobody was like, should we?
Look. Right. Oh, 100%. So, all right. Well, what did you guys think of, like, did you guys have like a favorite character, quote, song or scene? Like what kind of parts really stood out to you guys? Shireen, we'll start with you.
I always live for when Gina gets to sing "What Coyote Shivers." And I argue that that version of Sugar High is better than the original. I think it's also funny because this is a PG-13 movie. And the reason that they strategically place scenes in their performance is because of the things Coyote Shivers is talking about. Cause like, the lyrics are not child friendly. <Mm-mm>. And Gina also doesn't get so much to do in that one. And so I'm just like, I see you. I also just really, really, I've grown up to be a Joe. I thought I was going to be a Gina, but I'm such the adult. And I'm like, what'd you do with the money? I don't want to do this. I got to save you too. I got to save everybody. I'm tired. And he was a drummer and he was good at it. He never got to do it. And he sees through Rex Manning, but he can't say anything because he needs this day, this Rex Manning day, to save the store. I also love Deb because like she's the only one who's over it, and she's also like brilliant. She's doing the accountant in a booth and she's like, I'm almost done, Joe. The quarterly taxes will be in by the day. And this is why she's like shaved her head, is having a breakdown. I'm just like, am I also Deb? Oh no.
Like Deb's the only one seen working kind of throughout, like in a lot of her scenes.
Everybody else was on that NBC sitcom life where you say you have a job, but you're never actually doing your job, which is why you have so many scenes in the back room where nobody's out front. Anybody can be stealing. And I'm just like, okay.
Right?
But also every needle drop is the perfect needle drop for the perfect moment and commentary on so many things.
Absolutely. I love the sound. I'm a big soundtrack listener. So I just love that this movie, there's very few moments where there's no music playing between the score or whatever the kids are listening to. So Trent, what about you? What moments did kind of stand out to you and you were like, yeah.
Moments. I love the end, them dancing on the rooftop. I think that's super fun and very that. And I loved it. Like it wasn't, there was romance involved in this movie, of course, with AJ and they, at the end, it wasn't like, oh, they're happily ever after. They were all dancing together. Like they, it, 1 minute it would be the two girl or Gina and terrible names, Liv Tyler dancing.
Corey.
Corey, yes. And then like the two boys were dancing at some point. I liked it that it was just kind of fluid like that. That's probably the moment that stands out for me character wise. I really liked the evolution of Gina. I liked that she, at the where she started and where she ended. I thought that was really strong. And like the moment when she comes in at their fake funeral for Deb, and said, you know, and like speaks to Liv Tyler and tells her, you know, you're brave, you can, you know, you're leaving this town. It's what she really wants to do, but she's too scared. And then by the end of the movie, she's singing with a rock band that she wanted to do. I love that. And I like that she's a sexual character that isn't, that's not all that she is. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, I want to be the pretty one and have sex with everyone. It's, I want to have sex with everyone, but really, I just want to sing in a rock band.
Yeah, I mean, Gina was always a lot of fun to watch. Just, I've always kind of appreciated her openness with her, you know, just being a horny teenager in the '90s and not being sorry about it. And the way she talks about like how she spent her weekend with two men, two big men, as she's like ringing up like the old guy and he's just kind of like, it was, I love it. I love it so much. She's a lot of fun. And I love the rooftop scene and her singing. It was always like, as a kid, I was just like, that's what I want to do too. I want to be like Gina and sing. I can't, but that's okay. So for me, I mean, it's hard for me to kind of narrow down like favorite scenes and moments and all of that, but some of my top are the shoplifter scene, the fact that Lucas keeps a pair of like boy sneakers. Was wild. He's like, he's got shoes stashed around like Mr. Rogers just waiting to go running after people. And but that whole kind of scene with Gina on the loudspeaker promoting cannibalism and thanking people for stopping and then just the introduction of Warren and stop calling me Warren, my name isn't fucking Warren. He's a hoot, that kid. Also, like, Lucas is just really sexy in that scene, anticipating where Warren is going to go. And then, yeah, it's kind of hot.
Yes. And they picked another song for that, Ready, Steady, Go. And I was like, I am. Mm-hmm. Wait, we're not talking to me. Look.
I think that might be like my favorite song off the soundtrack. Cause I still own it on CD. I listen to it a shitload. And that one's just always, I mean, it's in the title, Ready, Steady, Go. So it's a good one to kind of get pumped. But yeah, again, the music choices and the way the songs kind of lead into each scene or play up each scene and how they choose which lyrics to play over those moments that really feed into it. Like they're like the Gwar scene with Mark, and he hallucinates. And once Gwar starts talking to him through the TV or whatever, the song that's playing in the background just kind of gives that feeling of like, what I can't remember the lyric now, but it's just like shit's getting a little weird. And it's just, it's so perfect. I love just like the thought that they put into the soundtrack.
I love the Hey Joe needle drop as we're zooming in on Joe. Mm-hmm. And we're just like, if we had a lead, it would have been Joe, but we don't have a lead. This is an ensemble piece, but he's got real problems. And never forget how to go.
Yes, he does. And that's okay. Yeah, the Hey Joe. And then is Joe's breakdown drum set, and then how everyone just stops what they're doing and they just dance and part. Like, I fucking love, who wouldn't want to work here?
I love
dream
it.
Dream job.
Right? I would still apply to this day. If somebody rolled up like Empire Records is opening, I would be like, let me get some Crocs. It's finally that time of my life to get comfortable shoes that I'm embarrassed by. I'm going to go work at a record store.
Yeah. They just made it look so cool. I never ended up working in a record store, but I did work at a video store for like 2 weeks, got fired and started sleeping with the manager. That was fun.
Good times.
Yeah, it was, you know, the 90s. I don't know. All right. So let's kind of talk a little bit about some of the differences between the remix and the theatrical cut. And Trent, since this was your first time watching it and you saw only the remix, did you feel that there were scenes that maybe didn't need to be there?
It felt like there were some weird cuts. Like, there were weird, like, did I need to see that? Did I need to see the, you know, I don't know. It just felt, there were moments where it was super smooth, and I think that was the directorial vision of how he shot it. But then there was, like, two or three times that it was like, and cut, and cut, and cut, and cut. And I was like, this feels weird. So nothing that like stood out as necessarily unneeded, but not necessarily in the style of the cinematography for the rest of the film.
The stuff inserted definitely slows down what should be a little bit more faster paced of a movie, because it is the 90s, it is rock, it is punk. And so we don't need that scene between the first insertion. The first insertion is like the one that's like, this is not the edit I'm used to. And it's after Lucas is like, this requires the obedience. I know this line, hold, I wrote it down. Like, this requires, no, I didn't write it down. I might've tweeted it. But it's like, this requires the obedience of a god or something like that.
Of a saint.
Of a saint, thank you. And from that line, it's supposed to cut to him drumming on Joe's money and like drinking Joe's beer and shit. And that's the joke, because like, he's not, we all knew he's gonna mess it up. Even Gina was like, don't screw it up. And so having that woman come to the store for no reason and just sort of be like, destiny's real, you know. And like, we don't need that. We know where this is going. Like, we know what we signed up for. And also Gina and Rex Manning hooking up was not that long getting into it. They literally have their wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and they go to work. And us being like, let's slow it down. Let's have this awkward moment that we never really finished.
Yeah, that was a lot.
Yeah. That was always, I'm glad that they cut, you know, yeah, Gina and Rex kind of milling around in the back and Lucas just being like, the fuck? And because it was unneeded. It's just awkward and weird. And it doesn't really add anything to it other than just painting Gina as kind of a bad friend in that moment. But I would, so with the beginning and the tow truck driver's wife coming to the record store, you know, obviously it can be cut and the story tells itself just fine, but I thought it kind of added a little bit, yeah, a little bit to that, like, destiny, do you think things are written, a bold and courageous act or whatever could change the course? Because then, you know, we get to like the end, like Lucas has a couple of like fourth wall breaks. Cause then he sees the Music Town stuff and he looks at the camera and he's like, the time to hesitate is through. And then he's off to Atlantic City. And then at the end, right before the dance on the rooftop, he's like, ah, perfect. Well, almost again to the camera. So it's like, what are you guys trying to do with Lou? What are you trying to say here? So that kind of, I felt, added just a little bit more to that.
C-plot. It feels like Lucas is being a Shakespeare character in a movie that is not a Shakespeare movie. And I also because like even AJ's like, you're different today, and so this is not how Lucas normally is. And so the older I get, I'm like, is Lucas on a bad trip and also still dealing with some things? Because we know that like Joe adopted him and we don't know what that was like, and so I think that he's trying to like help but also still having those pushing people away tendencies. And so I think he knew he was going to get in trouble. And that's why he's like, I'm going to do it. If things go wrong, he'll make them me out this time because I don't deserve to be loved or whatever. And so like, you have all these things. And it's part of the reason why Joe doesn't know how to respond, because Joe's like, I want to be cool, but also this is $9,000. But also I can't let him see me break because like, we've done all this work for all these years. So like, it's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I never felt like Lucas fit with them. I don't know, it just, everyone else was super connected and super like intertwined with each other, and I got it, but then Lucas always felt like an outlier. Like, I did not understand his relationship in the group. You know, like, how is he connected at all to Gina or to you kind of get some of him and AJ, like, they're okay, I get that relationship, but like, I don't get his relationship with Corey or really any of the other characters. I don't know. He just felt so weird. It felt so different.
I wonder if that maybe is just kind of, yeah, because he is different. You know, AJ's like, you're like the Chinese guy from Karate Kid. What's with you today? What's with today? These non-answers. So it's like, yeah, I don't know. I kind of see what you're saying there. And I think maybe that's why I always kind of liked him, because he didn't kind of fit with the overall kind of aesthetic of the group. Because again, he looks like a beatnik with the black turtleneck.
Mm-hmm. He is a very 90s trope to have the character talking to the audience while everybody else is doing the things. And so like, it does mean that we get his relationship with Joe and we get his relationship with AJ a little bit more, and he even gets moments with Warren. But like, we don't get to see this manager manage after he like blows the money, obviously, because why would you put him in charge of anything else? Mm-hmm. and so I do think that like, I like Lucas, but I also think that if we could have like worked him in a little bit more, that might be a different movie. And I'm curious what that movie would be. But again, I love this movie as it is. So I'm not mad. Again, we've had this trope forever where like the one character is just like, the writer wants you to know this. Don't forget I'm here with you. We're all going in this world together. And it's like, this is your family, dude. You can hang out with them. I'll follow along.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I can't remember if this scene was originally cut from the theatrical release, but it's like, so it's the scene after they find all the Music Town stuff and Mark is sitting out in the store and he's reading the Music Town rules. And his line, it's so simple and it's so, it cracks me up every fucking time. It's like, no Tupac, no Dre, no Cube, no Snoop, no Mr. Big.
That was definitely not in the original because that's right. The only scene with Black people. And I would have noticed that because my only real note for this movie is where are the Black people? Where are the brown people? It's never just an all white world. But even the customers who show up are just like, hi, we're all white together. And I'm just like, okay, I see you, 90s.
Yep.
Yeah. Another thing that I clocked that I was like, it's not surprising due to the time in which it was made, but it's still disappointing, is the treatment of queer people, especially with the guy in line to see Rex. And he's like, oh, I'm going to faint. And then the lines about like, what the something tested well with young men. He was like, have you tested how many Rex Manning fans are gay guys? And I was like, I don't know. I don't always love being the butt of the joke, especially when we're not in the room to begin with. So I didn't love that part, but yeah.
Understandable. And, you know, it's like, I remember kind of watching, you know, in the 90s when it first came out and being a young dumb teen, I'm just like, oh look, yeah, they checked a box, they've got the gay guy in the line, and you know, so I'm like, oh look, they've, you know, it again, 90s, 14 years old and just dumb as fuck. But it's like, there was, it always seems like, especially looking back now, they're what now is problematic, it was almost like these were half-ass attempts. Mm-hmm. And they just fell flat, especially looking back now. And it's like, I look back at some of my behavior and some of my fashion choices, and I'm like, it came from a well-meaning place, guys. I promise. I wasn't trying to be a piece of shit, I swear. So I feel like what some of that is also kind of, yeah, just of its time.
The older I get, the more, until that line where Lucas says the incidence of homosexuality, that's the exact line. Mm-hmm. Until that line, I don't know Lucas is straight. As an older person, as a kid, I was just like, everybody's hetero, it's what it fucking is. But as an adult, I'm just like, what's going on here?
He's all over the lady in the, I mean, he could be bi, I guess, or pan or not, you know. But he's all over, he's very hetero presenting. You know, he's all over the girl in the casino at the first scene, and they're super flirting. Yeah,
I forget about her because she's all over him. He's still breaking the fourth wall, mm-hmm. and so it feels weird. Mm-hmm,
that's true.
Because mm-hmm. like, had he been like, oh yeah, let me get into this, but he's like, and then destiny and that and that and that, and so like again, I'm just like, I don't, until that line, I am not sold that he thinks he's a straight man, and then he says that, and I'm like, oh. Okay, and it makes him less fun. And I feel like, again, I don't need to reboot this. I don't want to remake this. But I feel like if this were something that was made today, I think that it would be interesting to explore Lucas as a queer character. Whether that is somebody who's non-binary or maybe even like somebody who's a lesbian or something. I just think that it would help us get a little less testosterone, mm-hmm. And a little bit more engagement and maybe help some of these like awkward moments we have with him. Because again, I like him, but like also he got some problems we could work through.
Well, and that might help, you know, if that character, whether it be male, female, non-binary, whatever, if they were queer, it might help them feel like they were more into the group. Like they would have something other than just being, I wear black. and steal money.
Ride a motorcycle. We get why he's here later in the movie, and it's so late because, again, we've been watching him and being like, why aren't we doing anything about this? I know that, like, you're in a weird place, Joe, but also that's $9,000. Because when it comes out that he was, like, put in a home at the age of 10 and then Joe got him out 3 years later, which, why was Joe adopting children? We don't know. Was there a wife? We don't know. Was it a girlfriend? We don't know. Obligation to a friend? I want to know. But, like, we know that they have that tie. And we know that that is why Lucas doesn't always feel... Basically, everybody here are misfits and they don't feel like they belong with their families and their other friends. That's why they're here at the store all day when they're not working.
That's why the store feels like a house. It's got a couch and like, mm-hmm. I've never been to a break room in a workplace and seen like loungewear.
Like, and a whole ass art like, table.
It feels like an extravagant green room. And like, they have time to work on their art during the day because like, there's too many of them working already. And so, like, it definitely gives you that sense of, I found my tribe, I found my family, and we're all here because we all have a shitty situation back home. Like, we don't know all of what happened with Deb. We know that her and her mom are not speaking, obviously, because she has that line telling Joe, if you find her, I'd like to have her number two, so I can have some questions. Yeah. And so I feel like the misfits are coming to Joe because Joe is something in him wants to, like, save these kids and help these kids. I think that he knows that his drum career is over and the music store is all he's going to be doing, if not another music store, this one. And he wants to like make a home for these kids who don't feel safe, which is another reason why him and Lucas are not like immediately like, call the police. Mm-hmm. He's like, I saved you, I'm going to save you again, but I'm just bitter about it. I just need a moment to like figure it out.
So he's not maybe, I mean, he's like a cool boss, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's a good boss, but he's a great like surrogate father-ish figure, older role model for these kids, because even though it's kind of awkward, he has that nice moment with Deb where he's just like, you're doing a good job. He's trying to help, really he is. And you know, and all of these characters are kind of, they have their own like sweetness in their own way. And I'm thinking actually specifically of Eddie in one of the cutscenes where Deb's getting ready for her fake funeral. So she goes over to like wherever Eddie's little vinyl counter is. And I love that he's so like vinyl snob and just appreciates the music and knows so much about it. But Deb's going through CD or going through vinyls, and Eddie's very carefully, as cautiously as he can, is curious about her self-inflicted cuts. And so she shows it to him and she's like, oh, can you, and just keeps, she's just like going through the music and everything. And she finds her record and she's like, can you play this for me? And the way Eddie's like, anything for you, Deb. It's a short, sweet, we all kind of say it at some point in our lives, but like, you really get the sense that like Eddie, this kind of goofy with his brownies with too much sugar, air quotes, he really cares. And they, and I think that small moment really kind of shows, illustrates like the relationship that I think they all kind of have with each other and all share, that deep down they will be there for each other and they truly do care for each other. So it's a
100%.
Yeah.
Like they're all, it is like a family. I feel like in all of their schools, once we were still in school, they are not fitting in obviously because high school is awful. And the ones who are outside of high school have it rough because like AJ is definitely paying for his own apartment, but he feels like he's not 21 yet. I feel the same a little bit about Eddie and maybe Mark. And so you have like this group of people between the ages of like 17 and maybe 20, 21. Maybe Lucas is probably 21 at least because he went to Atlanta City and they let him in. Mm-hmm. But like, it's weird. And they all sort of look to Joe as a dad figure and they all look at each other as sort of siblings, except for AJ who has the crush on Corey. And Corey, who has the crush on AJ, but won't admit it because, like, she's dealing with her own stuff. And it's just, it's so much, and it's so relatable because I think we've all seen these sort of dynamics at play somewhere in life if we've, like, worked in places or, like, done the arts or other group things. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm thinking specifically of, like, towards the top when Joe is looking for the money and is about to, like, throw a fit because it's like, where is this money? Where's Lucas? And AJ's like, I see you're having a moment, but also you're the dad figure, so I'm going to talk to you. I'm really going to tell Corey I love her today. I'm really going to tell her. And like, he hears something in his voice that time and he's like, oh shit, I am the on-duty dad. Well, good. You should. She's lucky to have you. And I'm just like, he's having an emergency, but it's like, I'm going to stop and like father you a little bit. because he's been very flippant while he's like throwing couch because she's looking for money and shit. And AJ's like, you know about love? And he's like, well, my first wife left me for a woman and my girlfriend threw me out gunpoint. So I don't think that I am the next one. But again, he's good with the kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he's
looking for $9,000 in couch cushions.
Oh, I love that money. So much. It cracks me up. To this day, it still makes me laugh. Like, really, what do you expect to find in there? The money or Lucas? I don't know what your expectations are going through the couch cushions. It's adorable. But he tries to console Corey after she has her massive breakdown. He even tells Gina, you know, he's like, well, go home, which I'm not really sure how I feel about them kind of in a way dismissing Gina and being like, you're the problem here. You're the one that needs to leave. Like,
and not Rhett.
Exactly. And I think maybe the one's not scheduled, so maybe I'll go home.
There's too many people here, which is why shenanigans are happening. Now, I definitely read it as, you and Corey are about to have a moment and I can't have any more moments today because exactly, yeah. Corey comes again and they do have a moment. And I'm just like, this is what Joe didn't want. He's got everybody having moments. He's had 9. He wants no more moments. But here we are throwing pills at each other and screaming.
It's such an... And Liv Tyler is amazing in that scene. The way she... Nothing's fine, Joe. Nothing's ever fine. And I'm just like, ooh, she is like Jesse Spano on pills, excitable right now. Holy shit. She's just fucking up there. And oh, and then okay, so then the deleted scene that's in the remix is after the guys grab her and kind of are calming her down and she's still hyperventilating. I hate this fucking moment. I'm so glad it got cut. But then Deb coming up out of nowhere and she's like pleading with Joe, let me take care of her, Joe. I can take care of her because I'm angsty and troubled and I can do this. Like, oh, it's so much better to just cut to the bathroom scene with those two.
Yes. Yes. The things that were added in aren't all needed. Like, very few of them, I was like, I like this being here. That's when I wish could go. It's too far out there. It's like, are you trying to do like a Greek tragedy all of a sudden? That ain't your lane. Also, like, if an employee is terrorizing the store and like 4 of the other employees have to hold her down, that's going to be on the news. I'm sorry. I know it's the 90s.
What? it just doesn't make sense with Deb's character. She never asks for permission to do anything. She just does it. Mm-hmm. And I think that adds a little misogyny into it of like, oh, please, Mr. Man, let me take care of my fellow sister. She's in need. And it's like, Deb, but that, what?
That's a really, really good point. I hadn't thought about it that way, but I think you are absolutely right. Because yeah, Deb does whatever the fuck she wants. And so it's just weird for her to be like asking for permission.
My question is, what were they going to do with her if not turn her loose to Deb? Because they're just going to sit there and hold her in the middle of the store forever. There had to be an end point. Like, I don't love this scene. I think it's better to have her like start throwing shit around and then cut to her and Deb in the bathroom. Because it's a gross bathroom and you get your face in the sink and Deb's not washing her hands after pissing. And so it's a lot of infractions.
Thank you. That will always... Oh my God. When I was, I've gotten better, but I would see that scene and then have to go wash my hands.
Listen, it's so disgusting because, and my thought is, I would be thinking, you just had your hands in my face and my hair. How long have you not washed your hands?
Exactly. Oh my God.
And so it just, yeah, I feel like it was inserted, but it needed to be put back onto the cutting room floor.
And you know what? Who cleaned the hair out of the sink? Because after Deb shaves it, she tells AJ, it's still in the sink if you want to glue it because he's gluing quarters to the floor. I just thought of that. I was like, okay, because hair is not easy to clean up off a wet surface. Mm-hmm. Also, I would think Deb would be itchy as fuck.
Yes.
Anyway, but okay. Sorry, that just popped. Like, who cleaned the sink?
And again, like there's so many of them not at work that are at work. And that they are, again, like a giant family. It's like somebody being like, oh, Deb had a moment. Let me clean this up so nobody else talks about it. I also just love the way that they come in and they already know nobody's business. Like, people came in and not talked to anybody. It's like, I heard you went to this and did that and that and that in Atlanta, Lucas, and the mafia's after you. And he's like, sort of, kind of, no. Again, it's like a big family. It's like a big, I mean, again, like we've had green rooms because we're theater kids, Trent. We've had green rooms where people are just there all day doing homework, making phone calls. I should make them privately. doing all kinds of things.
Go home. You have a home.
Custodians are coming through being like, aren't your rehearsal over? Shouldn't you get out? And people are like, I don't want to go anywhere because I don't want to go back to my real life and my real problems. It's more fun to have communal problems, like what Lucas did with 9 grand.
Yes, I have a question though. So one of the scenes that I feel like didn't age well, again, I didn't watch it as a kid, so I'm only watching this in 2023 vision. But like the scene where Mark is being a creep around that girl who's just trying to listen, I was like, my dude, like, I get it. You're awkward. You don't know how to treat, how to act around women. But like, did he like kiss her foot? That it was.
Yeah.
Very odd.
I completely agree.
We still have that problem when men sit down at computers because they don't understand that the creepy shit that people used to allow in the 80s should have been there. And so they're still doing it in the 90s and today. Like, we have this big thing right now because Stranger Things, not Will, Will's brother, whose name I just forgot.
Jonathan.
Thank you. Jonathan Byers definitely took pictures of Nancy without her knowledge of her in a bra. And we never talk about it. We never talk about it. And like, people act like Steve is the villain for beating him up. And I'm like, he definitely sort of assaulted a girl. When you take pictures of people without their knowledge, that's assault. Mm-hmm. And so Steve's on the right. And that's when I'm like, you know what? He might be okay. And they're like, no, make him a babysitter. They forgive him. I'm like, he need to be forgiven. Jonathan does. But yet Jonathan and Nancy are not together. We don't talk about it. I'm like, red flag, Duffer Brothers.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I always kind of took that moment as good or bad. Maybe a little nod to like all the problematic shit in Revenge of the Nerds. But I would agree that like, so at like teen me was very much like, oh, I wish Mark would come up and try and sneak a kiss because he's cute and I'm horny and I have no control over myself. But as a grown ass adult, I'm just like, no, that's not okay. You crossed a line. And then the kissing of the foot is weird. That's my thing.
And she's at a ballerina, so you know those feet are not cute.
Yes.
But it's enough.
And I'm sorry, why isn't she wearing her shoes in the store?
Listen, it's another moment that feels like it's something somebody borrowed from a Shakespeare play somewhere, because Shakespeare loves having men just like randomly creep on ladies. But he's the one we need to be doing in all the theaters and never talking about that.
Yeah, let's see. Speaking of kind of more problematic behaviors and characters, good old sexy Rexy. What, Trent, what did you think of good old Rex Manning?
I did not understand why Corey was like, I'm going to lose my virginity to Rex Manning. Like, what? And I did think that, like, This entire movie is high camp, in my opinion. Like, everything is heightened and, like, over the top. So the music video of, what's the song called?
Say no more. Lips are for kissing baby's door.
It was extremely 90s, but, like, I thought the music video was funny. But him, one, telling Corey no and then going after Gina felt predatorish, and it just felt very odd. I know all these, I think I know that all these characters are 18 and over.
Corey's 17, mm-hmm. Which is why when he asked her age, she's like, I'm old enough. So my thing is, I hate Rex Manning. Obviously, we all should, that as people. But he is like, I'm gonna eat this food. And she's like, I'm like, don't give her a Lolita moment, don't do that. And then he's like, how old are you? And she's like, old enough. And he doesn't ask any more questions. So he's like, I've done the bare minimum. Let's do this. Mm-hmm. And then she runs out because he has that gross line about, I hope you like blue cheese, and starts to like shake the bottle of salad dressing to put it on his dick so she can like suck it off. And that's when she's like, And so he was gonna fuck her. And then she was like, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. And she left. And so when Gina comes up, he's like, you know what? I do love a groupie. Let's go. Because again, he's not a good person. And so he was going to fuck anybody who offered.
Yeah. I often, with this, especially with this last time watching, and it's like, yeah, why was he? It almost seemed like he was going to be intentionally gross. He was being intentionally gross towards Corey to scare her off, because maybe one, he did just want to eat his lunch. Two, just kind of like, well, here we go. But yeah, to then choose to fuck Gina over Corey, is it because Gina is more comfortable in her sexuality, whereas Corey is the kind of quote good girl, the nice girl, and he didn't maybe want to corrupt that? I don't know, but it just, it did seem weird. And maybe the assumption is that Gina approaches Rex after her fight with Corey. Again, a bad friend move, in my opinion. But he goes with it. And it's like, why? Like, what was the draw to Gina over? And I just think maybe it's because Gina has that confidence in her sexuality and not being afraid to being like, let's fuck. I don't know, but it was kind of weird this time. Something I noticed.
Like, it's definitely because he comes in gross and we know he's going to be a problem. Joe knows he's going to be a problem. And Joe's probably heard some of these stories from his time in the music industry. And he's like, we need fucking Rex Manning Day. I didn't schedule him. My boss did, but let's get through and get this money. I got other problems. And so like, he's definitely trying to like do the things because he's going to have like Burko bring Rex's lunch, which I think is definitely dad being like, he can't be around my girls alone. I've heard stories. Also, Burko's gonna hurt his feelings, and I kind of want that in my life today.
Oh, the passive aggression. I love it. Absolutely.
Because Burko just comes in, he's like, oh, you work for Rex Manning. He gets very few scenes, but the feelings he gets have so much impact on me as a person.
I always loved Burko's hair, too. It's just, it was the coolest. So
I did not know before Empire Records that Burko was Cody Shivers and that Cody Shivers was a musician. So this movie, again, taught me culture. Because I was like, this is a real song? And I went out and found, I'm like, Gina's not on it? I don't understand.
Now, so with the remix versus the theatrical cut, in the scene where, you know, they're beating up AJ and, right, you know, and they bust Rex fucking Gina and all of that, and they all tell him like, your music sucks, we hate you, your hair is stupid. In the theatrical cut, he leaves angrily. He's just like, why don't you all just fade away, and does a bow and leaves through the door. In the remix version, it almost seems like they're trying to give him some sort of like redemption arc where he has this moment of like, oh, maybe you guys are right. And he kind of starts questioning where he's at and how he got to where he's at. And then there's a couple of deleted scenes where he has a short moment with Burko outside, and he's like, this is where my career ends, and it's in some, you know, shitty town small record store. He sees Burko holding the guitar because Burko can't go anywhere without his guitar, and he's like, oh yeah, I used to play, and you know, they wouldn't let me play on my last three albums. So there's like these little nuggets of context that Rex is not in charge of his own life, and like, now we're supposed to feel a little sorry for him. But then and then the last deleted scene is during the rooftop concert, they call him up and they do a cover of Say No More, Mon Amour, and then it goes into like a Beatles homage where the cops come and they handcuff both Burko and Rex together, and then everyone's like cheering. And then they cart him off. And then this is weird. The final shot is Lucas, and it's really grainy too. So it's like Lucas is standing off somewhere, and there's like a, I don't know, like he's just watching over everything, kind of adding to this weird, what is Lucas in this movie question. So hearing that, what do you guys think of, I'm glad they cut it because I kind of like keeping Rex as like more of a villain piece of shit type and just being done with that and not these conflicting feelings of like, oh, he's a person with feelings.
Well, go ahead, Trey.
I was just going to say, I've always loved the original. Why don't you all just fade away? Because his character works because he's high on his own delusion. He knows his good days are over, but he will be damned. Nobody else will treat him like he's the best thing that ever happened. Like the woman in line. And she's like, you're my favorite singer in high school. And he's like, who's your favorite singer now? Like, he knows his time is over, which is why he's here picking up last minute young groupies and signing autographs to probably make rent. He's embarrassed by himself, and he knows this. And why don't you all fade away is the best exit line for that villain.
Absolutely. Yes, and I don't love giving him a redemption story, because to me, I think one of the messages to take from this film is the problems with corporatized art in the music world. And he is the embodiment of that, like even more so than Joe's boss. And I think to give that a redemption story goes against the point, or one of the points of the movie.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's kind of weird that they still kept that moment in the remix. I feel like they can just keep Rex as kind of like the villain piece of shit and then just be done with him. We don't need to come back. But it's, like I said, it's conflicting. Because I'm like, now you're trying to paint him as a person? Don't do that. I have spent a number of years disliking this man. So, but I love Max McCallum. Yeah.
I love to hate him because, like, again, this movie, he is the villain, and corporate America and corporate greed is the bigger villain. And we can use, like, Joe's boss represent the corporate greed because he's in a suit and he just doesn't understand culture. But, like, the person that we should be mad at, we're not mad at, which is Lucas, who stole the money and started all this shit. We want to be mad at him, but we can't because, like, again, we're like, they're all misfits. They all are doing the best they can on some level, even though this was a big fuck up. And again, I wish that we got to know earlier in the movie that Lucas is Joe's adopted son, because we're just like, he's just a good dad figure, but it's like, no, he really is in charge of this boy. And so like, there's no way he's not going to get in trouble for this $9,000. And that's why he's going to really cover it on top of being a good person. And I wish we'd gotten that sooner because, like, again, we don't know why we're not like burn Lucas, send him to jail right now, but also we're not like that, which I've never understood. And when we get that line so late in the movie, I'm just like, I wish I got that up front because I've been going that he's a good guy and he is, but I wish I could have like had proof of that and been validated earlier in your movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's another scene in the remix where, yeah, Joe and Lucas do have kind of a short little heart to heart moment on like the back swing out back or something. So, which I think that does happen before we find out that that Joe's his adopted dad. So yeah, just a little bit more context on their relationship and and kind of why Joe's working so hard to protect Lucas, because otherwise you're just like, man, that is one hell of a boss.
It also makes me wonder if Lucas is a fresh 21 or if he's like a late 21 or 22, because I get the impression he's still living at home with Joe. I get that impression.
Yeah.
Especially because of the way that Joe is like, I'm going to be responsible for this both ways. That's what I'm getting when he says, when we find out that he's responsible. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if like in the eyes of the court, this is still fresh, but also under 25, you're still a dependent and all the other jazz. So I don't know. I don't have kids, but like, maybe that's part of it. I wish that we could have more of that because we're inserting all these scenes I don't need. And I just would like more time with them to figure out their relationship, because this is a big betrayal, this $9,000 that we've blown. And we never get that moment, even when Joe's beating up in the office a little bit for as much as you can for a PG-13 movie. He's beating up in the office a little bit. We never get I'm looking out for you. I thought we were family. I thought we had each other and you just ruined everything for me. Mm-hmm. We never get that.
Yeah. I often wonder if that quick moment of Joe handing Lucas the paper towel after beating his ass was supposed to be that. Look, I still care about you, but you fucked me over, but you're bleeding on my shit.
And it's just so weird because he's like, you deserve that, you know? And I was like, he does, but I don't think we should say that after we beat his ass in front of all of his friends. I think we should like wait. Because I mean, again, he's clearly old enough to either have a fake ID or to get into the places in Atlanta. I don't know. This is a grown person you just assaulted, but also he's so nice. This money and their relationship are the things that keep me up at night. Like, I just
understandable, and I love it. I love it so much. All right, and speaking of Joe, and kind of getting towards the end of that movie, and Mark goes like after Warren comes back with the gun, and man, I wish kids would just use fucking blanks these days. That scene hits so much differently today, where I'm like, this isn't as funny as it used to be. This isn't as like entertaining. This is terrifying. I don't like it.
Warren and their white privilege could have been a whole children's book written from this movie, because he's been arrested this place twice now. And both times I'm like, well, he's a juvenile, so he's getting out. They literally like, he's a juvenile and use blanks, so they can't do much to him. And he's there with his badge 2 hours later drinking beer. And I'm just like, mm-hmm. You let my ass show up with a pack of Skittles. I'm on the news. And this kid's like, I'm shooting blanks at a store. And that scene gets us nothing other than him finally being like, I too want to feel like I belong somewhere and all these other misfits belong. Why don't you just let me be here? And Deb being like, hi, I tried to kill myself last night, so I'm not afraid of you and your gun. So I'm going to like go ahead and de-escalate this and get back to real business. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all that scene gets us. I do love that Burko is behind her, though. He's like, I was like a bullet for her, but I will be here to assist.
Oh, yeah, good old Burko. Yeah, it was. And then it's just kind of funny too, because when the cops are like, oh, there's not much, you know, they're going to do with him. And then AJ makes the employee badge, because that's just how you interview to work at Empire Records, apparently. But the way Warren is like, can you hold on to it until I get back? Like, you're going to be serving 10 to 20. What the fuck? You're literally back 2 hours later.
I want to know where this boy's parents are, because if I bail a kid out twice in one day, he's coming home. He's mm-hmm. not going back to the streets. He's not going back to the liquor store. He's at home, and we're talking about military schools and which auntie he's going to live with, because I'm done. And so the fact that he's just like, thanks, Mom and Dad, I got to go somewhere. Do this again.
Oh, 90s parenting. I mean, that's still kind of like the latchkey kid and Gen X and being forgotten and ignored.
Day, this movie is definitely a bunch of suburban white kids finding finding family, which is, again, like when I was a kid, I didn't know anybody. I'm like, oh yeah, that's just the way it is. But as an adult, I'm just like, we didn't need it to be an all-white cast. We know this, right? And because like that, the older I get, the harder it is for me to just be like, these white kids have problems. Just, my patience is as thin as my hair is getting, and I just don't have it in me. But I do still love this movie, so it's one of the ones that are still getting a pass for me.
Mm-hmm. Same, yeah. I mean, because, like, yeah, we see Corey's family's house. It's, like, the biggest fucking house. So she's fine. She can have all these breakdowns, and she's got a net, and she's going to be fine.
One of the added scenes for this version, and maybe the remix, is the sister riding the bike to deliver the letter. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I feel like her dad would have done that, because her dad is such a presence without ever being on screen. I think he would have been like, this is your Harvard letter. I opened it and you got in. It felt unnecessary, like a different movie as well, which is why I'm happy they cut that from the theatrical. Because mm-hmm. I was like, who this kid? Why mm-hmm. is she on a bike in overalls? Does she not belong in the same family? I have questions.
Yeah. But and another scene that made it into the remix is, okay, so yes, after the whole, like, Warren gets arrested and the news crew's down there, and then Mark gets the idea to go announce, like, this big concert. Okay, first of all, what a testament to local news, local late night news, that that many people saw the call to a party and showed up. and then the whole, like, let's sell beer. Don't we need permits? Screw the permits. Okay, fine. Screw the permits. So much fiction. So much fiction. I love it.
Maybe that's why we were drawn to this movie. It's science fiction.
Yeah. So what did you guys think of, like, that? And, like, would you guys have gone to, like, some big record store party and, like, at midnight, seen a band, like, catching the announcement, the show announcement on local news? Sorry, that just makes me giggle.
It really depends on when this would be happening. If this is High School Trent, probably not, because High School Trent was a goody two shoes who never did anything. If this was you didn't know this, Sheree? Yes, I was like, I went to this place and then told my parents I went to this place. Oh my gosh, I'm so nervous. My idea of a party was a movie night, like, goody two shoes.
I don't know you anymore, Trentington.
College, you knew me. You knew College Trent. College Trent to today, abso-fucking-lutely, I would be there.
I'm the opposite, because, like, as a child, I was like, I'm gonna do so much cool shit when I grew up. I'm gonna do all the parties. I'd be there at the record store. I'd be friends with Gina. And now that I've turned 25 a few times, I am like, I'd want a shirt on a Friday night and sit up. Why did I agree to do this? Like, I just want to be left alone. I want to be, well, let me go home. So I would not be there. I'd be like, There's no seat. There's no air conditioning. You want me to spend money? Oh, the music's too loud. My fun days are over.
Yeah. Yeah. Teenage me, absolutely. In a fucking heartbeat. 20-year-old me, probably as well. Ooh, 30 and up. No, I've got shit to watch.
Listen, I'm behind on so many shows and movies, and I can do that with my own alcohol in my own home and no people. Like, they don't tell you that when you're a kid, but the older you get, the less people you want.
Exactly. I love not being around people. That was a lot of fun.
I am an island.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That moment is just so silly. Fuck the permits. Screw the permits. Whatever. They just clearly have not they've given up. They don't give any more fucks. And you know what? I love them for that. Now, even though there's never been, as far as I know, any talks to reboot, remake, or reimagine this movie, do you think, because Hollywood loves to pull that shit, and with the writer's strike, God knows what they're going to get their fucking hands on to try and, like, I don't know, fuck with. What do you guys think of, like, could this movie be remade for today's time? And would you want it?
No.
Short and sweet, to the point. I love it.
It would make no sense. Where would they be working? There are no locally owned. Well, there are some. Don't get me wrong.
It'd be a Whole Foods.
It'd be a Whole Foods. It's just not the same world of this film. This film is a time capsule of the 90s. The music, the costuming, the actors, the storyline, the workplace that they're, you know, it's all quintessential 90s. I just don't know how you translate that into 2023. They're like, everyone uses streaming services now for music, like iTunes or Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon Music. Like, I don't even know the last actual physical CD or disc or tape or vinyl I've bought. Like, there are some people who do the vinyl thing, but typically they'll order those on Amazon. Like, I just don't think that there's that. Or it would have to be a very, like, niche store, like in Chicago or New York or something. I don't know. I just don't think it would work in the same. It wouldn't be like a small town record store. It wouldn't. They're just not there. Mm-hmm.
I think that it could work, weirdly enough, in two different ways. I don't know if I want them, but in two different ways, I see it as if you change it from a record store to like an independent theater, because like, capitalism is still a problem, especially for the arts. And even if you don't want to do like a national theater and do a movie theater, like, there's only so many mom and pop theaters that are still around. Like, there's one here, weirdly enough, and it's one of the things that I do kind of want to stay around for, even though I don't like being in Minnesota. It's kind of nice to go in and be like, you have two screens and your expensive ticket is $8. Ooh. And so I think that could be a thing, because those are always being bought out and sold. And so that could be cool. I could also see it moving to the stage, sort of like the Evil Dead musical, or like that Breakfast Club thing they did. I would love to be in charge of that, because again, I love this movie, and I think that it could be fun and it could be exciting, and you could have those moments of, don't forget the 90s really were there.
Yeah, I could see it going to the stage for sure, because you wouldn't have to update the period. It could still be a 90s setting, and you could clean up a lot of the stuff we talked about, like more representation, more diversity, less icky.
My Lucas is going to be queer, and we're going to like give them less fourth wall moments, because they need to be interacting with other people. I just,
Less Rex Manning having sex with minors.
Yeah. Or we're breaking the fourth wall with a purpose. We're not just gonna be breaking the fourth wall just because. I think that those are exciting things. And again, I love this movie, and so I would not advocate for touching it, but if we're going to touch it, I'm available for hire after the strike is over.
I love the idea of putting it on stage and making it like a musical. It would be perfect, because then you still keep all of the, just how closely tied it is to the music and how important the music is to the film and how the music propels the storyline and adds to those scenes and moments. I hadn't thought about that. That I would accept. Anything else? No, thank you. Because I agree. This is a time capsule. This is it captures that perfectly, captures that 90s teen angst, the depression, the obsession with music stores, damning the man, all that really fun stuff. So I think this should be left untouched, but I would be okay with a musical. I want that.
I will say, I think you would need, for a musical version, you would really need the right writer, music writer, like a lyricist. And it wouldn't be able to be like a one of these modern day kind of movie musicals that they're turning movies into musicals where it's pop music. It would need to be 90s.
Yeah.
Yes.
90s dance, 90s grunge, 90s rock, 90s, even some 90s like acoustic pop.
In my perfect picture dream world, I either cheat it and it's a musical, like they say, Footloose is a musical. Footloose is not a musical. Kevin Bacon dances to tracks that are not really being sung by people live, y'all. Mm-hmm. But y'all want to be like, it's a musical. It's not. I would cheat it that way so we could not have people breaking all of those things because I'm not a musical person. Or I would cheat it and make it really cool and hire somebody like Billy Joe Armstrong, who made American Idiot into a stage adaptation I never saw because, again, musicals. But I did fucks with Green Day. And I think that he knows 90s music better than anybody else that I could probably like talk to.
As a fan of American Idiot the musical, I would agree with that. And you could also get Alanis Morissette to help you out as well from Jagged Little Pill the musical.
Oh, and then I'm loving this more and more.
Plus, Billy Joel is bi, and so like that would help us avoid any music that might be problematic in theory. in theory, for queer communities, because again, he's a white man, and so I would still be like, Billy.
Oh, I like this. I like where this is going. This is beautiful. Like I said, I'm not a big fan. Like musicals aren't my top genres. There are a handful that I do actually really love and enjoy watching. Like Across the Universe, the Beatles one, it's one of my kind of, I don't want to say guilty pleasures because I try not to feel guilty about things that I love, but it's one that definitely kind of could fall into that category, but I love it. And so I kind of like where this is going with the, because this is totally going to happen now, guys. With the musical of Empire Records, I think I would watch that because I love this movie so much. And then I'd critique the fuck out of it if they fucked it up.
Right. And I think that because the movie means so much to those of us who found it, because it has a cult following and never did super well and super succeeded anything, which is, I sort of love that for certain movies because otherwise we end up with like 5 sequels nobody asked for and sort of like bastardizing the property. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I like to be a one and done, and this is definitely a one and done. And you have all these actors in their prime. You have all this music in the prime. Like, what other album had like the Gin Blossoms and Throwing Muses? Coyote Shivers on it. And so it's almost like in a bottle. It's one of those things that was the right time, the right place, and we're never going to get that again. Mm-hmm. But I think we captured enough to be on stage if we play our cards right. And maybe, again, it's not so much a musical so much as we're going to play these like things as people are doing the things. We're going to have these like montages and stuff, and it's going to be fun and fine. And we'll be like, I do remember this song, yes. But we have to have the right to say no more, Monet more. Otherwise, we can't proceed.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's totally a deal breaker.
Like yeah, I agree. I agree. And now with Maxwell Caulfield as Rex Manning, I'm trying to think. I think I saw Grease 2 before this movie. And I will maintain that Grease 2 is the superior Grease movie. I love that movie. I will die on that hill. I don't give a shit. Michelle Pfeiffer, that white gold. I love her in this. She is... The way she climbs the ladder and dances on it, no one else can do that.
I've not seen that since I was a child, but I saw the original Grease so many times as a kid that I think I was biased when I saw it. Also, Stalker Channing. Like, you just, that Rizzo, who was like 20 years older than everybody else, is the only Rizzo that matters. The only Rizzo. I thought I'd like musicals because of her. I was like, look at me, I am Sandra D. And I was like, oh, I don't like musicals. I like Stalker Channing. Okay.
Yeah.
I will say, I'm not going to fight you on it because I am not a big Grease fan in general. So, you know, I haven't seen Grease 2 in a long, long time. So I will let you have that.
The next time we swing through, we should make Grease 2 on the agenda. Because
absolutely. I love, I mean, don't get me wrong. There are issues with it, but I'll let it slide because, again, it's a lot more nostalgia. It's like when I have too much nostalgia attached, I admit I get kind of the rose-colored glasses, and it's harder to critique or like kind of pick apart. So I try to do a little bit better with that, but that's one where, yes, some of the scenes and some of the themes are cringy and problematic, but I think it's on purpose and I love it.
I think the first one also had some things that were wrong with it. And again, I don't like musicals, but I definitely, that was always on because again, when we had cable, we're like, oh my God. And you're like, I haven't seen this for the last time we had cable. Put it on immediately because HBO Max is going to play it again and again and again. And so I definitely saw that way too many times. I saw The Best Little House in Texas way too many times, especially for a child. I wanted to be Dolly Parton as a child. I wanted to be a madam. And nobody ever unpacked that with me. But also it says a lot about where we were in the 90s when a kid is like, this madam has agency and is a boss. I want to be that. I don't want to be what I see everywhere else on TV. Because she did. The 90s. And then Chicago rolled out and I was like, 5, 6, 7, 8. And so, yeah, I seen... not the Jinx Monsoon version. I saw a version of Kansas City many, many years ago. But seeing that Chicago is more of a jukebox musical and doesn't have any of that story from the movie upset me so much to my core. I was like, yeah, just run out and sing. You don't have, okay. Can we go home? I know we paid for this.
This has been fantastic. So I think we're going ahead and we'll start segueing into the Midwest goodbye and we'll start with the Stray Bubbles. So this is the last chance to bring up any notes, fun facts, rants, raves, fan gushes, whatever. Trent, do you have anything left for this movie that you love so much now? It's your favorite movie.
I don't. I'm just going to reiterate. Liv Tyler is a vampire and I'm here for that.
Absolutely. And I love her look. I love the 90s look. I don't care. Give me all the combat boots and short skirts.
Listen. I was such a confused child because I had this thing where I wanted to dress like the boys I was obsessed with. And so I was like, I want to dress like AJ. I don't know what that was. Again, homeschool, no internet. And so here we are. but I think it might be why I'm still in the cardigans today. And he definitely thought... I think he's the reason I thought I had a type when I first got out of homeschooling, because I was definitely here for the artist who is struggling and that had to stop. but it's because of AJ, because he's like, my other thing I love about AJ is he was like, I'm going to quit this job that I love that I've been working off and on at for 5 years to move across country with the girl who I told I love and she didn't say it back. But I know that we're either going to be really great friends again or we're going to get it together. And either way, I want to be there to support her. And you don't make the men like that on TV because usually it's like, I've blown up my life and I'm moving across for him, Felicity. And so it was refreshing to see equality for once. I'm like, wait, men can be people? Mm-hmm. Science fiction, yet again.
Yeah.
I've seen 2 or 3 versions of this movie now because I don't know if what's on YouTube is the remix or a different version because some of these scenes, again, don't feel familiar. And I, every time, check for Tobey Maguire because he's in the credits and I have yet to see Tobey Maguire.
That's right. I forgot
that. Every time I'm scanning background actors, like it's my job and I do not see him.
Well, I still get the DVD and the DVD player. So maybe I'll do it soon because I forgot about that.
One day I'm going to break down and start a Reddit account to be like, where's Tobey Maguire in Empire Records? Just tell me. Give me the screenshot.
Please. Now I need to know.
On IMDb, it says his scenes were deleted.
But again, they put some in the remix and the one on YouTube. And so I thought he'd be in one of those versions because he's never been in the original, but he's in the credits. And I've been looking my whole life. Like, I shit you not. Okay. I found this movie in the 90s when I was a wee baby. and since I saw his name and I was like, that's Spider-Man, I have been looking. I've been searching. I'm a Rihanna song. I can't see him in any version we've had so far.
Huh. Yeah, I'll have to remember to try and see if I can find him because I always forget. It's just one of those fun little kind of tidbits that just doesn't stick though.
When I was
okay,
go ahead.
I just Googled. Tobey Maguire was cast in the movie but dropped out due to personal reasons. And so I don't think he's in any of the versions. He's just credited.
I've heard tell he's got some deleted scenes because I've been looking my whole life because of that myth.
It does say IMDb credits McGuire's role as Andre, but the scenes he shot were cut. So maybe he's in the some of these remixes and reshoots.
It's another version, and I want it. Like when I was a kid, at one point I tried to tell myself that he was Eddie, and he's not Eddie.
No, yeah.
I'm so desperate to see him. It's like, is this dress purple or is this dress blue? I'm so desperate.
That's interesting. So he requested his scenes to be cut.
Oh, now
what's the tea?
I'm trying to think if this is the same little fun fact or tidbit or whatever, but because I think I heard that he was going through some like addiction issues at the time and yes. he was not in a good place.
So that's why he got it. Okay. That's why he wanted it. I just kept reading. He was struggling with alcoholism at the time and checked into rehab shortly after.
Oh, okay. So yeah, maybe they are just scrubbed from existence. Who knows? But interesting.
I didn't know that.
Because it would have been the earliest I would have seen him, because he didn't have his big boom until like right before Spider-Man. That's when like Cider House Rules and all that other stuff came out that I was too young to be watching, but I kept trying because he was cute.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Pleasantville?
Yes. I love that movie so much. I just yanked my microphone.
Him and Reese Witherspoon were like, we'll never do horror movies because we're artists. And then he's like, I'm going to be Spider-Man. It's like, you're artists.
Yeah. Oh, I loved Pleasantville. I haven't watched it in a really long time, but now I have a feeling I'm going to have that feeling that this movie's trying too hard. But I think I'd still enjoy it.
I've not seen it in forever, and I keep wanting to, because that Fiona Apple cover always gives me so much life. It's been on so many playlists. Like when I directed a show in my undergrad, I worked it into the like sound. I was like, we have to enter with this, or we have to close with it, but we're gonna do it just so y'all are all clear. This studio's gonna be lit. And so I think it was in my pre-show or my post-show while we were like scene changing, because I was like, we need it. And they're like, why are you this way? I'm like, because I know music. Again, I thought I was gonna write for the Rolling Stone, and I think it's because of this movie. This movie also sent me down the path of Artist Boys, which I had to get over. I have yet to find a cartoonist that I should have been talking to in that era of my life, but I talked to all of them.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see. For me, I don't have a lot. I will just say that the listening booths, how sticky would that's so disgusting. I'm sorry, but just a lot of hand jobs and finger banging. Mitchell Beck looks like a Wish version of Mark Summers. and let's see. And that'll be it for now, I think. Oh, and just again, the whole like, is Joe a good boss or a bad boss? Because he leaves Mark to take care of the store during Deb's fake funeral, which appears to be peak hours. And it's Mark. How could you do that to Mark? But he's supportive of his
my toaster.
Kids. Right.
And I love him. But I'd be like, no, baby, you need to be back here with us. Can we get an adult out there?
Oh, all right. Good. And then, you know, AJ goes out there because he's clearly more capable. But all right. Did you have something?
While we're talking about this particular day, because that's what this movie is, mm-hmm. they allude to a different day where Gina was crying because the dentist broke up with her. And like she wore a skirt that he hated, and that's when he knew he loved her because he could love her in that skirt. And I'm like, what did this skirt do it? And so again, they have drama days every day. And this could have been a really cool show had it gotten an audience.
Oh my God, yes. Just the daily hijinks of the Empire crew. I love it.
Hi, is Mark high again?
Hallucination every episode.
Right? Will Lucas be moving out of Joe's house now that him and Rick Manning's former agent are getting together?
Oh, and that was like a deleted scene that I did like, was we get a little bit more time with Jane and Joe, where she actually comes in and sits down in his office, and they kind of have this moment where they share like, what happened to our lives? How did we get here? So I like that because it makes her coming back make a little bit more sense.
Because you haven't seen the original Trent, like literally the kids are laughing at her because of her job, and she gets up, and the time we see her, she's coming out of Joe's office. He's like, please don't quit today, not today. And then we see her when she comes back up to be like, you want to go to dinner? And I'm like, girl, I mean, Anthony LaPaglia is cute, but also like, I feel like I've missed some stuff.
There's the points of this relationship that are missing.
Right. Mm-hmm. I am also just shook if I never knew he was Australian until today, because I've been looking at him my whole life.
What?
And I was like, excuse, he's Australian, because I was looking at the cast, because I was like, Johnny's still cute. Who else is still cute? Anthony still looks the same, but with shorter hair, obviously, because he's on those crime procedurals as well. That's good money. I'm not mad. but he still looks kind of the same, except for like a little bit older. Johnny looks exactly the same. I was like, Mr. Sir, what you been doing? Where you at? I did not see a wedding on that Wikipedia page. Can you allude if you're single?
I didn't know he was Australian. Oh my God.
Nothing I know is true anymore, because that shook me, because I've looked at him forever and he's usually playing like Italian men, or he's playing just like generic American men, but he's never been like, let me speak in my accent. And so like, I was like, ah! Record scratch.
I'm dumbfounded. I've just like, my mouth hasn't closed since you said that.
Like, oh. I was almost late. Cause again, I was doing that after the movie ended this morning. I was like, ah! I was like, how did I not know? And then I want to try and find something anywhere where he might be speaking in his accent, because I have to see it now.
Absolutely. I'd love to hear that. I love Austria. I love accent. So yes.
Same. Accents are a different phase. That's a type I've not gotten over, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Same. All right. Well, we'll go ahead and move on, and we'll go to the 6 degrees of Nicolas Cage, where we will connect this movie to Nicolas Cage in 6 steps or less. And who would like to go first? Did you guys do it? Did you guys play along?
I took the easiest route because I was a movie bitch in the 90s.
I took the easiest route because I'm terrible at these games.
All right. Well, okay. Let's see. Trent, would you like to go first?
Sure. I went, so I had 2 routes I could go. I'm going to go with my favorite. I went with the one that I know has the most movies that I've seen, and that's Liv Tyler. I was between her or Renee Zellweger, and I went with Liv Tyler, and I don't need one step, because they were actually in a film together called Super. And what year did that come out? In 2010. Kevin Bacon and Liv Tyler were in a film together called Super.
How to Get Nicolas Cage.
Is that not, wait, that, oh, never mind. I was wrong. I went to the wrong thing.
While you regroup, I'm going to go, because I got Liv Tyler.
Damn it. Go ahead.
So I went with Liv Tyler because she did a movie called Armageddon with Steve Buscemi, or Steve Buscemi, depending on how you say it.
I was going that route too, damn it.
Yep. And he definitely did Con Air with Mr. Nicolas Cage.
He sure did. Oh, I love this. Well, I have two. So I'll name one and see where you end up with on your redo, Trent. But I went with we'll go with Robin Tooney, and she was in The Looking Glass with Nicolas Cage.
I need to see that still, because I have not seen enough of her stuff. I mean, I've seen this in The Craft, and I've seen her in some other randos, but I've never been like, let's have a Robin Tunney day. Mm-hmm. But I should, she's a good actor.
She is. And again, like the fact that she, you know, is willing to shave her head for the role in Empire Records. I love when actors kind of have that much like dedication, where they're not afraid to like alter their look for a role. And then yeah, she just will wear a bad wig in The Craft, no biggie.
Right. It makes that bad wig that much more respectable now that we know.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now that I know it was for this movie and not for something else, I'm like, okay, I'll give it to you. So I fixed my problem. Okay. And I went with Renee Zellweger to Nicole Kidman in Cold Mountain. And then from Nicole Kidman to Lucas Cage. That's a different person. Nicolas Cage in Trespass from 2011.
All right.
I haven't heard of Trespass. Ooh.
It looks real juicy. I haven't seen it either.
Is it a thriller?
Yeah, crime thriller.
Put it on the list for future season.
Joel Schumacher.
Ooh.
Screenplay by Carl Gajusik.
Okay.
Married couple taken hostage by extortionists.
I'm leaning in.
Fun.
So I did it right this time.
Yay! Good job, everyone. And then the second one that I had, just to get it out there, I did use Johnny Whitworth, who was in Ghost Rider 2 with Nicolas Cage. So
I'm going to watch that tonight now.
It's like, I might have known that if I would have watched Ghost Rider 2, but there was something about the first Ghost Rider where I was like, you know, I wasn't expecting a lot, but this is still pissing me off.
Nicolas Cage is so random that I've stopped going in to love the movies and going in to see the performance.
Exactly.
Because, like, was it Prisoners of Ghosts or Ghosts of
Prisoners of the Ghostland?
Yes. That movie, I don't understand. I felt like I was, like, on acid, but I have never taken acid. At one point, he's yelling about his ball. I'm like, could you blow his ball off just so you could yell about it? And they're like, yeah, we did. And I'm like, okay.
That movie is fucking wild. And we covered that movie on the pod in our second Nicolas Cage episode because I have two.
You do like nine. Like, he's got a catalog.
But yeah, that one is wild. But then like The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. That one is just so much fun. And those two are adorable.
I'm in love with Zadie Pascal. I have been since his episode of Buffy. And so it's on my list. And I think it's on Stars now. So I might do that soon because I'm having withdrawals since The Last of Us ended.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. That fucking show. All right. Yeah. I did my watch and reacts to that. And then it ended. And I was like, huh? What? I'm still recovering, I think.
I got a PS4 and played the game because I wanted to know where it was going before they could hurt me anymore. and I did. And both hurt me differently. And I was like, how dare you? Oh, and then no. I played game two.
Oh, no.
Apparently, I'm just going to get my feels hurt forever and always by this.
All right. Well, on to the last of the Midwest goodbye. What's been streaming in your guys' bubble? So, Shrey, what have you been watching other than Empire Records and loving it?
Obviously. I'm finally watching Fringe because I'm a Joshua Jackson Stan account or a historian, as I've dubbed myself. And it's on, I think it's on HBO Max. I'm like, let me finally start this. It is a wild show. I thought it was X-Files for millennials, but she's like, no, the second one, we're going to have rapid births and secrets. I'm like, excuse you?
What?
And so I'm hooked. I need to like get into some episodes this week because otherwise I'll drop off. We've also been finishing up our season, and so we've been doing 80s movies, which are wild. We did Attack of the Killer Clowns, we did A Fire Ambush of the Dark, we did some stuff, we did some bangers and some stuff.
I'm looking forward to the stuff. And Trent, what's been streaming in your bubble?
So y'all know I love my trash reality TV. I have been getting, I've never seen it before. I've been watching Big Brother Canada and I'm obsessed. It's all on Paramount Plus. Go watch it now. It is everything you want. Anyway, and then as for scripted stuff, I watched, what's that Netflix show with Kerry Russell? The Secretary, is that what it's called?
Diplomat. Oh,
the what? Diplomat. So good. I need a season two. I will say it's kind of slow in the beginning, so you have to give it like an episode and a half before you really get connected to all the characters and understand the inner workings and everything. But that end, the ending, it's a cliffhanger, and I need to know what happens. So good. I love Kerry Russell. I think she's fantastic. The rest of the cast is also fantastic. And it's set in London, so like, hello.
Awesome. I might have to add that to my ever-growing queue. So for me, I've been watching, I'm almost caught up on, I still have to watch the more recent episode of Yellow Jackets. Fucking love that show.
Dang.
Oh my God, it's fucking bananas. Ah, I don't want to give too much away, but there was definitely a moment in episode 6 where I was like, nah. Okay. That's all I'm gonna say.
This season has done so many things that I was hoping they would do in the first season. And I'm just like, finally, yes, eat her. Let's all eat some more people.
Oh my God. Yes. Oh, I love it so much. And then kind of going back and forth between Yellow Jackets, I'm watching Queen Charlotte, A Bridgerton Story. So one Charlotte for another. Those are my extremes. I've got Yellow Jackets over here. And then my weird, random, guilty pleasure, air quotes, of these period stories, the kind of high fancy. there's something about it. I don't know. It's like the pastels or the wigs. I can't get enough of them.
I love the first season of Bridgerton. I could not get into the second season. and I haven't started this offshoot yet. So, but I love the first season of Bridgerton. Loved it.
Mm-hmm. I think I like the first season better. The first season is definitely sexier, but the second season I enjoyed that a lot too. So, and I've been really enjoying Queen Charlotte. I like the casting of the younger versions.
Mm-hmm. My issue with the second season was you made the first season, and like the whole time, the dude that's the protagonist in the second season, I'm not giving anything away, it's kind of an asshole. And I'm like, now you don't want me to care about him? But you spent this whole time telling me he's an asshole. So now I don't really care about him.
Mm-hmm. It's very conflicting. I understand. All right. Well, I just want to thank you guys again for joining me today. And if you guys want to let us know where we can find your podcast and all that good stuff.
You can definitely catch us at A Nightmare Fierce on Twitter and A Nightmare on Fierce Street on Instagram. And that way you can keep up with all of our shenanigans and see what we're doing. We are hurling towards the end of our sixth season. Math, yes. But we have summer shenanigans already in store. So we're never too far gone.
Awesome. Wow, six seasons. That's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's so cool.
Like, we were like, what do you mean it's over 200 episodes? How did that happen? Math.
That damn math that gets you every time.
We've never been good at math. So, you know, we do 80s movies and accidentally do a movie from 1990. We do 70s movies and do a movie from 1980. Like, you know, it just happens.
To be fair, The Changeling was good. And we did need to talk about it immediately, even if it didn't fit the 70s. What?
I completely understand that. So sometimes you just got to talk about something and you got to get it out before you explode. So
happy accidents.
That's right. All right. Well, and of course, thank you to all my lovely bubblies for listening today. Make sure you guys go and check out their podcast found on any podcast player near you, and keep streaming. Bye. This is where you guys say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.